We need to stop. Whatever ghosty, whatever spirit, get the fuck out if you don't like it. I don't like having my stuff muffled with. Go away! Cassie Shima, Ghost Hunter.
Well, I found the intro to the episode now.
Everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Who Is My Doctor?
Who is my doctor?
Who is indeed? I'm your host, Zach, and I know a lot about Doctor Who.
And I'm also your host, Cassie, and I have a cat with me today.
Yeah, we tried recording this episode a little bit ago, but our little cute kitty Bailey decided that she wanted to join in on the conversation, and she would not stop screaming no matter how long we tried to wait.
So for those of you who don't know, I have a cat who is 15 years old. She a old lady kitty. And because I was unemployed for like 4 months, the cats got very used to me being home all the time, and I've recently gotten a new job, so I am not home all the time. And so when I am home, the cats are very into being in and around my personal bubble. So for this recording, if you hear the sound of a cat purring underneath me, it's because I have to put her in my sweatshirt like she is in a little Bailey Bjorn, or else she will not stop screaming.
So I will do my best to cut down on the background noises just so they're not bothering people. But
if anybody complains about the sound of a little kitty cat purring underneath my vocal tracks, fucking get over it.
Have you no sense? Get better opinions.
Jeez. Could you imagine somebody being... I could hear the sound of a cat purr. Yeah. Grow up.
Well, I hope she enjoys today's episode, because we're going to be watching the Sixth Doctor serial, Terror of the Vervoids.
Ah, Vervoid, my favorite app.
That you can watch being Puppy Cat.
The McElboys.
Yeah, there are all kinds of programming on Vervoid.
Vervoid is the little box that you can watch only Verve on. Kind of like a Zune, where you could only download MP3s. You could not download MP4 tracks onto your Zune.
Don't judge me in my Zunes.
Did you have a Zune?
I had 4 Zunes.
Oh my God.
I still
God.
Have 2 of them.
I didn't know this.
Yeah, I got the original big Zune, and then I got 2 of the little ones. And
yeah, I just had an iPod. Yeah. I had a Shuffle.
Yeah, I never had an iPod. I didn't have an Apple anything until I had to get off my parents' phone plan.
Wow.
That's when I had an iPhone, yeah. But up until then, I was one of those Zune kids. I liked it because it had a bigger screen. And then they replaced it with a little one that did not have a bigger screen, but I was so like brand loyal at that point.
Yeah, I always wanted a Razer. Duh. Mm-hmm. Who didn't?
I had one of those too.
And then I wanted a BlackBerry, but I have chunky thumbs and I couldn't type on it. But then I had one of those little flippy phones, and I loved my little Oh, and then because I didn't have an iPhone for many years, I had the first Nano that came out that had the little, it was a game where you were in a cannon and you had to shoot the little like parachuteer soldiers falling out of the sky.
Oh, okay.
And then the one where it was like you bounce the ball off of the little bar at the bottom of the screen.
Oh, Breakout?
I think so.
Yeah.
That, and then I got an iPod Touch, and I thought I was like king of the castle. So I have a phone and an iTouch.
Well, we're going to go back to a period in time where that was, even that much technology would have been wild to think about. We're going all the way back.
There's more science and more there's more engineering in your phone than there were in the computers that launched the first rocket to the moon. That's insanity.
We're going,
because that fucking thing took up a whole like wing of NASA. Anyways,
we're going all the way back to 1986 for the 23rd season of Doctor Who.
So when we watch these episodes, you're not going to see them called Terror of the Vervoids on screen. They're going to be called Trial of a Time Lord parts 9 through 12.
Okay.
The reason for that is because the show was basically under threat of cancellation, partly due to budget cuts at the BBC. And one of the reasons the show was getting a budget cut was because the person in charge of the BBC did not like Doctor Who. There's a lot of rumors as to why that was. Some of the more obvious things are he was in the middle of a romantic relationship with Colin Baker's ex-wife.
Are we sure that the person running the BBC in 1986 wasn't a future Christopher Eccleston who also hates Doctor Who?
Well, Christopher Eccleston doesn't hate Doctor Who. He hates the people in charge of the BBC, so.
Okay, but that's what I'm saying. Yeah, is there a possibility of a future Eccleston being in charge of past BBC?
I don't know if we've talked about this. Christopher Eccleston is technically playing the Doctor again right now.
I saw promo pictures because that's been coming up on my feed more.
I think he's now doing his second audio drama with Big Finish. He did the first one during COVID because as he said, I'm an actor and I need money. I have kids to feed. Which, you know what? Perfectly valid. Good for him. But Colin Baker was a very interesting, he had a very different idea of what he wanted the Doctor to be from what the show wanted to be. Colin Baker and honestly a lot of the people at the show wanted to take the show in a darker direction. But the people in charge of the BBC were like, no, the show is for kids. It needs to be less violent, more funny. And so that's why he's dressed the way he's dressed in this like multicolor technicolor suit.
A beautiful suit.
Another one of those theories as to like why they were trying to oust him. And I don't think this one holds water because of where things have gone. But the head producer on the show was a man named John Nathan Turner, who was an out gay man in the 80s in Britain. I don't think that had anything to do with it, because the guy in charge of the BBC came around to Doctor Who in 2005 when the show was once again run by an out gay man. But also, just as a reminder, Doctor Who's kind of always been a little gay.
What? No, I didn't look up different fanfics about Two and Jamie. Don't be absurd. I didn't have a whole 30-minute conversation at breakfast about who the gayest doctor is with one of our very good close friends. No.
It's very well. First of all, the gayest doctor is in Shooty, because in Shooty is openly not straight.
I'm so excited for when we get to
Shooty. Yeah, we'll get there soon. Well, not soon, but we'll get there eventually. So season 22 of the show, the season before this one, they had restructured the show to be more like what we see now, where the
episode... Wait, season 22? Mm-hmm. Season 22?
Yes, season 22. What we're about to watch is from the 23rd season of Doctor Who.
How many seasons are there?
Of the original show, there were 26. Right. Yes. 26. There were 26 seasons of the original run of the show from 1963 until 1989.
I hate this fucking show.
If we include the new ones, we're over 40, but they restructure them every now and then. So season 22 of the show, they had restructured it to be more like what we see now in the modern show, where episodes were 45 minutes long and multi-part stories are really just two episodes. And they had planned on doing that again because the ratings of the show went up. That was the reason why the show ended up not getting canceled, like they were all kind of worried it was going to, because the ratings went up for this new season. However, then the BBC went, we're going to have to cut funding. And one of the things we're going to do is your episodes are 22 minutes long again. And also you only get 14 of them. So instead of going for, so they went from 12 45 minute episodes to 14 22 minute episodes, effectively cutting the amount of story in half. So to make up for that, John Nathan Turner, the producer, had come up with this idea for Trial of a Time Lord, where the Doctor is being put on trial for breaking one of the fundamental laws of being a Time Lord, which is that you don't meddle in alien and intergalactic affairs.
Okay, so trial like with a judge, not trial as in a challenge.
Yeah, no, trial with a judge. There's a judge and a jury.
Okay, I didn't know if it was also supposed to be like a double entendre.
Yeah, I mean, there's probably a little bit of an entendre to it because there's definitely he's definitely facing villains across the arc. But basically, the conceit of it was to do a Christmas Carol style narrative where the first. Where over the course of this trial, they would be presenting evidence before and against the doctor.
And there are sky fish.
And the first episode is from the doctor's past. The second episode was the story that happened right before the trial. And the third episode.
The doctor gets eaten by a shark.
And the third serial happens in the future after the trial when he's supposedly is part of the doctor's defense to show that he has reformed, quote unquote. This is also, if you remember, the Valyard that I showed you in our costume guide. That the Valyard is the...
Oh, what you thought I was going to call a big fucking nerd?
Yes, exactly. He is the bad guy of this season. Mm. He is the prosecution in the trial against the doctor. So what you're going to see here is very interesting. This story introduces a new companion named Mel Bush.
That's the name of a porn star
who because the story is looking into the doctor's future.
Mel Bush is Kate Bush's less popular sister or brother.
What this episode is doing is showing a story from the doctor's future. We actually don't get an introduction to Mel. She's just there. And while they had initially planned on one day showing the sixth doctor meeting Mel, this is also Colin Baker's last season. So they never get to do that. So Mel just appears and is there now. It's a very interesting frame for the story because it feels like a story that's already going with a character that's already been written and like that have a dynamic. So the only thing, so I'm curious to see how you're going to react to that, knowing that this is this companion's first story, how you feel about her. That's also a good segue into the Cassie Rafassi for today.
Okay.
Mel Bush is she's got a lot of things going on with her, partly because they threw her in mid story. They didn't really take time to like iron out her character. So her character becomes a lot of different things. But one of the most consistent things about her is that she is trying to introduce a lifestyle change for the doctor. Mm-hmm. Can you guess what the lifestyle change is that she is trying to give to one Colin Baker, sixth doctor?
Can I ask for clarification on something?
Sure.
Does the story itself take place in or around 1986?
No. So there are two segments to the story. There is the framing device, which they are on Gallifrey at trial. And then the story that they are watching in the story takes place in the year 2986.
Okay. Because I was going to say 1986 was like peak diet culture. So I could definitely see her being like, doctor, we got to take you to Weight Watchers. Yeah. You get points and they have these little sugar-free candies that are like little pieces of brick. They're so chewy and you'll chew and chew and chew and it'll never go away.
I mean, and this doctor does have some Richard Simmons hair.
Oh, my God. OK.
Can you imagine this doctor in a leotard? A sparkly sequined leotard.
Patchwork leotard.
So we got diet and exercise.
That was a bit so I could talk about my mom's sugar-free Weight Watchers candies that I would steal.
All right. So what kind of lifestyle change might you be seriously thinking about then?
Like genuinely, it isn't not in the same vein, but I feel like no, because we saw 11 eat fish fingers. I was going to say, is the doctor vegetarian? Because I feel like we don't really see the doctor eat that mm-hmm. much, with the exception of 11 having fish fingers and custard. Doctor might be a pescatarian. Anyways, off topic.
Do I get any kind of a hint?
I mean, I feel like lifestyle changes are such a narrow category already.
Well, yeah, but lifestyle change could be, hey, you need to have more fiber, or hey, you need to stop murdering people, which are two very distinct lifestyle changes.
I mean, this doctor was introduced by choking his companion.
I reiterate, you need to stop murdering people. Lifestyle change. I don't know. Well, because that also has everything to do with the Miss Bush as a person.
Mm-hmm.
Can so you give me like lowdown on her?
Sure. So I'll give you just a broad, some broad categories for her.
Yeah,
she
is the 411?
She is from 1986. So she is a modern companion in the way we have now. She was a computer programmer from, I believe it was Sussex. She is a vegetarian, so you did clock that one. She has an eidetic memory, so she has a perfect memory, or photographic memory, I think is what we call
fuff.
It. She's got big, curly red hair.
Cool.
And dresses like she's from the 80s, because she is. Otherwise, her personality changes a lot, because they try to figure out a lot of her story. And if I give you any more, I will be giving the game away, so.
Okay. She was a computer scientist?
Yeah, she was a computer programmer from the 80s.
I wasn't alive in the 80s. So, I don't know.
Maybe we could stick with the diet and exercise thing if that's what you...
I think that's kind of the only thing I can really, like, land on. And not even as a, this is what we're going to do for the whole episode, but more as a passing drive-by comment.
Yeah.
To the doctor that she thinks that he needs to take better care.
Mel looks at me. He's fat.
She's already miles away at this point. What? Yeah, just something about. I think it would be Mel telling the doctor that he needs to take better care of himself.
Okay, so we will.
So if that can be kind of that broad blanket statement,
Dr. Jazzercise, got it.
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll have that be a broad.
Hey, everybody, my name is Dr. Jazzercise. I'll be with you this evening.
trying to turn the doctor's health around is Mel Bush's lifestyle change for him. And then I've had you often describe what animal an alien looks like. I'm not going to do that today because I feel like I have leaned on that crutch a little bit. So instead, I will tell you that vervoids are predominantly two colors. I will let you guess two colors, and if one of them is correct, you will get the point.
Oh, no.
And when I say colors, I don't mean you had to be, it's not like vermilion or like cerulean. You can just guess yellow or blue.
But that'll be more fun for me because then that does open up the banks. And then if I say something that's like right in the middle between two colors, I'm giving away my game.
If you cheat.
No, but if I were to say something like chartreuse and mauve. Because then I could argue if it's green, yellow, red, or pink.
Mm-hmm.
Or purple. Yeah, I think I'm just going to stick with what I said before because I have a wide enough.
I want to make sure I want to look at these colors so I can.
Chartreuse and mauve.
Yeah, I want to.
Or phthalo green, ultramarine blue.
Okay, so chartreuse is sort of like a very light green.
Or yellow.
Yeah, like a yellowy green. And mauve is more of a, I don't know how you describe that.
Exactly.
It's like a purple pink red.
You can't describe it. I fucking can. I can make mauve into eight colors.
So Cassie's guess is green and pink.
No, it's chartreuse and mauve.
We will find out together if it's Dr. Huzempic and if the vervoids are mauve and what was it?
Chartreuse.
Mauve and chartreuse. As we watch Terror of the Vervoids, Trial of a Time Lord, parts 9 through 12. Today's episode of Who Is My Doctor is brought to you by us. We don't do a lot of actual ads on this podcast, and that's because we have a Patreon that helps support us. Over at patreon.com/whoismydoctor, you get episodes of this podcast a whole week early for as little as $1 a month. That means if you're interested in hearing our look at the Seventh Doctor right now, it's there. For $5 a month, you'll get a special thanks from me in the outro at the end of each episode. That's also where I normally put this promotion, but I'm trying to be better about self-promotion this year because I think Cassie and I are worth promoting. No specific pressure, but we are only $1 a month away from our hosting service being fully covered, which means this podcast would only cost Cassie and I time instead of money. Genuinely, huge thanks to anyone supporting us at any level, even if it's just subscribing wherever you're listening right now. But it means a lot to us that some of you are willing to chip in and help make this show possible. So, patreon.com/whoismydoctor. or you can buy us for a dollar. And we are back from Terror of the Vervoids.
Oh, boy.
That was your nap, Cassie.
The Verhu boys.
You did not seem too into this one.
Here's the thing. I have a confession to make.
Okay.
I really like Colin Baker as the Doctor.
Okay.
Just based off of this alone, mm-hmm. because I know that he is divisive mm-hmm. in that based off of what he's wearing does not match the way that he is portraying the Doctor, but that juxtaposition and that like mm-hmm. Gemini quality about him, I really like, so much so that as I was watching it, I went, damn, if somebody were to hand me a script for something that maybe I wasn't super familiar with, just I imagine that by the time that 1986 rolled around, 1985, mm-hmm. whenever he would have gotten the offer to be the Doctor, he would have been familiar, but not in the same way that we are now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's like handing somebody a script for something, something Mockingjay. You know, like a thing where it's like, oh, it's very beloved by a lot of people, but not everybody knows it.
Yeah.
And some of the like choices he was making were ones that I was like, I could see myself playing mm-hmm. the Doctor in a similar way. If we're playing this make-believe version where the BBC approaches an American person and says, you there, we want you to be the Doctor now.
What were those choices that you were?
It was specifically, and I think you know exactly which moment, but for our audience at home, it was the exact moment he said, I'm more of a sort of clown, actually. And I went, oh, my God, yes. Because he does lots of little magic tricks, and he's doing sleight of hand, and he's a bit cheeky.
Mm-hmm.
When he's trying to distract the guards, he sounds an untrue fire alarm so he can make the guard go away and take the mask, the two things he needs to have happen so that way he can go about and do his investigative work.
Yeah.
And I was, as we were watching it, I was like, I really do like the way that Baker is playing the Doctor. Mm-hmm. I like this take. And I suppose I'm also a little bit jaded just because I do have a penchant for men in fanciful, beautiful coats with wild and curly hair, but he did remind me a little bit of like a Gene Wilder as well.
Yeah.
Just in that very, like, it's a cool whimsy is what I'll call it.
Okay. I understand those decisions.
So I really liked Colin Baker mm-hmm. as the Doctor. I am just, I'm eating it up. The issue I had with this is that the story moved at a fucking snail's pace.
Yeah, it was very, very poorly paced out. And I think the main contribution to that is they told them this season was going to be a repeat of the last one, where it was going to be 12 45-minute episodes, and they changed it to 14 22-minute episodes.
Yes.
And so basically everything that they had done in preparation for that season prior had to be thrown out and reworked into this new format.
I could see this story working in a 45-minute format. Or two 45-minute formats.
Yeah.
But stretching it out and trying to add little breadcrumbs all along, where, because I know that some of the things that I said about the story that we just watched with two,
mm-hmm.
some of the issues I had was that there was too many people and like too few sets.
Mm-hmm.
It was like four different locations, excluding the TARDIS.
Mm-hmm.
And this one fixed a lot of that.
Mm-hmm.
We did have a lot of characters, but there were only a handful of people with names that we had to pay attention to.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a closed circuit. But we were seeing different angles of the rooms that we were in.
Yeah.
And we were never going into the same place looking at the same shot more than the once. Granted, that's also, this is 1986.
Mm-hmm.
We have the technology of having several cameras.
Yeah, and they would have little subsets. Like, it wasn't just like, oh, here's the room. Oh, it, like, the gym had not, wasn't just the gym space. There was also this, like, little cornered-off closet area with a control panel, and there was also the lockers for the gym. Like,
there was even, like, the close-up of some areas where, like, you are getting these wide shots, mm-hmm. but you can also zoom in closer to just see the doctor on the little treadmill.
I think that's what it was supposed to be, yeah. But to talk about Colin Baker's performance in general, I think that the thing that stands out to me about Colin Baker's performance is that he's very almost Shakespearean.
I fucking was just going to say that, bro.
Yeah.
I said it was like watching Hamlet in a silly coat.
Yeah. He does a lot of like big dramatic gestures. Like there's points, especially during the trial, whenever someone would like accost him, he would have to do a full like stand up from his chair. He couldn't just like point at someone. He has to like stand up and monologue.
He's very theatrical in that way.
Yeah. And
do we know if Colin Baker is a theatrical actor?
I believe all of them were theatrical actors.
Yeah, but like specifically, because you know, like you have your Tom Hiddlestons that are specifically like, he's a theater guy.
Yeah.
He's like a theater bro, but then you have your other actors that started in film and they do film, but they can do like a, you know, somebody like Jim Parsons. I don't feel like it's like comparing apples to tomatoes, but you know.
So very quickly doing some research on this subject, it turns out Colin Baker was primarily a TV actor up until he was the doctor. And then as soon as he left being the doctor, that was when he got into all of his stage work.
Interesting. I wonder if he just, that was something he always wanted to do mm-hmm. or something that he was.
I mean, it could also be that, you know, the acting scene in England is very competitive. So there could be a chance that once he got a name, he could do more things like be known on stage, because I know that one of his roles before he was the doctor was as a guard on Doctor Who. he matches one Peter Capaldi who had.
I was gonna say that sounds a little bit like
he had a bit part on the show before becoming the doctor. He has a way of speaking that I think is very both unique but appropriate to the doctor, where he likes, there's a part of him where it sounds like he wants you to know he's the smartest guy in the room. That's one of those things that seems to unite basically every doctor is they like people knowing that they are the one with the brain.
Yes.
The way that Colin Baker chooses to portray that is by using a lot of big words.
A lot of big, very fancy pantsy.
Yeah.
Like in SAT terms, those are $5 words.
Yeah, exactly. I do like his portrayal. I also know that, like I said, a lot of people who don't like the Sixth Doctor have a problem with really the writing around the Sixth Doctor,
which I also can definitely see that.
Yeah, which is not,
because in my defense, mm-hmm. I did not get a lot of sleep last night and I woke up early.
Yeah, we did take a little break between episode 2 and 3. So Cassie could take a little snooze.
I was eepy. Yeah,
no, I'm not judging. I fell asleep during an episode just a few episodes ago. So
to be fair, you also were playing with your new back massager.
Yes. Well, no, I meant back during Dreamland. I fell asleep during the episode. So.
Oh my god. Yeah, but Dreamland was a fucking
mess.
Oh man. And thankfully this didn't feel the same as Dreamland.
Yeah, this wasn't boring. It was just slow.
Like because once you find out what is happening, mm-hmm. outside of the trial itself, because there are some little things that the doctor he's being accused and in the like, here, let's look at my future. There are some things that are happening in it that he specifically is saying that didn't occur that way.
Yeah, exactly.
So I know that that is part of the much bigger picture mm-hmm. and that like mega arc involving the trial of the doctor. But mm-hmm.
there's a part of me that's a little sad we're not just finishing the story of Trial of a Time Lord, because it gets pretty goofy.
I mean, that's something that I wouldn't mind, but not today.
Yeah, that might be, I don't know, we might do something special with that. But
that might be later.
Mostly because I want you to see a character whose name is Savalom Glitz.
Savalom Glitz?
Savalom Glitz.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the stage, Savalom Glitz.
It's presumably his brother, Savalom Glam.
Yep, yep,
So we may get to that one day, but let's talk a little bit about the story. Well, actually, no, we should first talk about Mel.
I was going to say, I would like to touch up on Mel.
Yeah.
There was a quality about her that reminded me so much of Kathy Rigby. Do you know who that is?
She played, oh my God, it's on the tip of my tongue. Did she play Peter Pan or something?
Yes. Okay. She's also an Olympic athlete.
Okay, yes.
So she's very small and sprightly and very energetic and just hippah. And Mel specifically, her actor, did remind me a lot. And their same cadence as well and how they spoke is very, very similar.
Yeah, and it's worth noting that Bonnie Langford, in addition to being an actor, is a dancer.
So it could just be that there is a commonality between like sprightly, small, athletic British types.
Yeah.
Lang is her name.
Bonnie Langford.
Langford. And she's cute. She's so cute.
Yeah, and she's got an energy that totally like is opposite but pairs well with Colin Baker's doctor.
I like that this doctor doesn't talk down to Mel.
Yeah.
He goes, "I trust you. Go do a thing."
Yeah, there's a playfulness to them. Like at the end of the story, he comments that she has the memory of an elephant, which makes her like mad. She's like, that's his idea of a compliment, comparing me to an elephant. And he goes, "Yeah, but it's fun because it's true."
And also points to myself for clocking that she wants the doctor.
Points to you for basically nailing every question.
We'll get to the second one because I'm so smart. I'm so good. But this one in particular, because the episode, that's how you get introduced to Mel, is her cheering the doctor on, making him ride a little, not elliptical, right? Stationary bike.
Yeah, stationary bike.
His TARDIS Peloton.
Pelotardis.
Thank you. But yeah, I'm convinced that Bonnie Langford and Kathy Rigby were made in the same factory. She's also very skinny.
Yeah.
Which also, dancer, makes sense.
Yeah, and also works for the character. The character is supposed to be a vegetarian and a health nut is trying to instill that into this slightly portlier doctor.
Hey, it's cute.
I mean, I'm not angry. He's built like me.
I know. I did clock
that. Colin Baker's doctor is a lot like me.
Well, that's kind of that's what I was just going to say. I was like, of all the doctors, this is one where I'm like, oh, I like this one the most, I think. And now I'm realizing it's because he looks and acts a lot like Zach.
Yeah, round face, big mop of blonde hair. Like not out of shape, but certainly not in shape. Just made of circles, kind of stiff, likes using $5 words.
Also does not, like, he never once made me, a person watching, feel like there was a power dynamic or like a weird power dynamic between him and his companion.
Yeah.
Because that's how I feel a lot of the way, like, no Tino Shade, we know that she's my favorite. But like, especially between Eccleston and Rose. Mm-hmm. And like even Tennant and Rose, where it just felt sometimes like everybody talked down to her.
Yeah.
And didn't ever say, "You've got this, bud. You can handle it," until way later on where they're like, "Oh, yeah, you're good."
I think it helps that we're introduced in a way where it really feels like the doctor must respect Mel, because why else would the doctor be doing this stationary bike exercise in the middle of the TARDIS for her
and drinking carrot juice?
Yeah, because he clearly does not want to be doing it, but he's doing it out of respect for her opinion. And so there's a part of it where like we're introduced to the idea of them being on at least a mutual respect, if nothing else. I don't know if you want to call it an even playing field, because the doctor is the doctor, but them being on like there's a level to which they both,
there is a whole world of knowledge that she knows that he doesn't.
Yeah, that he is choosing to respect.
And so
I don't feel like someone like Tennant would have done.
No. Well, that's the thing.
Not Tennant as a person, Tennant's
No. Doctor. But I feel like that's been the issue. That's been kind of my beef with a lot of newer doctors, is that there is a certain pomp that I like and I'm attracted to, because I do love a pompous character, But there is something also to be said of like subtle pomp that you don't see mm-hmm. often. And that's much harder to do. And I know I brought him up already, but somebody like Gene Wilder did that very, very well, where it was the like, I am controlling the entire room by not saying a single word. I'm letting everybody talk themselves out and get tired on their own. Mm-hmm. So that way then I can come in and prove everybody wrong.
Yeah.
And that's something that Colin Baker is doing very well as well.
Yeah. And I think you get the best out of his acting when he's doing the Trial of a Time Lord.
Yes. Well, that's when you get a lot of that showy, like Shakespearean, very dramatic. Those are very like big actory moments. Mm-hmm. Whereas in these memories, it's a little bit different. Mm-hmm. Because also the memories are, from the doctor's perspective, they are his own memories, yet he is also featured in them.
Yeah.
I like that. I feel that Colin was doing his own thing for the doctor.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't remind me of any of the, you know, granted, at this point in time, I've seen two, mm-hmm. four.
Two, three, and four.
Mm-hmm. Wait, who is three?
Pertwee.
Thank you.
Velvet
yes,
Suits.
Yes. Thank you. 2, 3, and 4, 6, and then
9, 10, 11.
Mm-hmm. I don't feel like he mimics anybody before him. He's mm-hmm. not, you know, really copying or trying to take facets of them. Nor do I think any modern doctor has taken like bits and pieces off of him. I feel like he was really doing his own thing altogether.
Yeah, but at the same time, it doesn't feel incongruous with him. It just feels like he just took like some of these things that most doctors put in the back seat and brings them to the forefront.
Like, I don't want to say that this doctor feels more mature.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of does.
As I think I told you once that like not most people don't think of the Sixth Doctor very highly, but those that do, they love him.
I'm about to be beat up.
one of my friends, I haven't seen her in a long time, but one of my friends, her name is Zarya, but online people know her as Diamanda Hagen. Her favorite doctors
That's
are
a fun name.
Her favorite doctors are 2 and 6. 2 is her favorite and 6 is her is her close second. And I think there's something to like these doctors that like to hear themselves talk, there's ego to it, but there's not a control to it.
There's ego, but it's backed by kindness.
Yes. Like it's wanting to be acknowledged as the smartest person in the room out of ego, but also not wanting to necessarily control a room.
It's wanting everybody to know that if the situation falls, they've got it.
Yeah.
But not so much so that they are wanting to jump in and remind everybody who is the smartest one. Do you like my Tennant impression? I've been working on it.
Yeah, Tennant. I will say that's one thing Tennant got from the Sixth Doctor is that they both choose to express that through monologuing.
I mean, that's also 11, too.
11 also does that. That is true.
Jesus Christ, does 11 do it?
Let's talk about the story itself. Because it is pretty slowly paced, but I do think there's some interesting things to it where it's got a lot of different pieces moving.
I don't disagree. Because I picked up and clocked something very early on mm-hmm. because when they're going through, they find the seeds of Demeter. And I went, that is an interesting pull because you're familiar with Demeter. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So they also had the black hole of Tartarus.
Yeah, the black hole of Tartarus. And then at some point, the captain says, why in Hades? And I went, something Roman is going on. I'm sure that there is something that we could unpack on a much grander scale, but I'm not particularly well-versed in Roman / Greek mythology. Mm-hmm. But those were the few things that I really picked up on and said, okay, cool. Like, there is a little theme going on here. Mm-hmm. And particularly then with the Vervoids themselves, the theme of life and death.
Yeah, if I was going to take just a quick stab at things, I think what they were doing was talking about hubris more than anything. Because that was the thing that really defined a lot of the bad guys of this story. Because the Vervoids, while like they had their name on the episodes,
which
and they were,
also good for me for saying chartreuse and mauve.
Yep, they were that was quite.
I could not have been more correct.
Yeah,
because I understood when you said like, oh, you mean like pink and green? Mm-hmm. Because like I know I still would have gotten points if I'd said pink and green.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know how correct I was going to be with chartreuse and mauve. Because
there was definitely chartreuse in there. There was definitely mauve in there.
The chartreuse was specifically like on the outside of that like hood.
Yeah, they're like the back pedal.
Yeah, and then the mauve was like the color of their mane.
Yeah, their whole face was different shades of pink, but mauve was definitely in there. So you definitely got all points for this episode for
Thank
sure.
You.
This might be the most accurate you've ever been on.
Thank you. Well, I don't know. Animalistic little guy in special hat was also very.
I think the only time you've gotten like more shocking close was horseshoe crab.
Hey, when I'm right, I am so very right. And when I'm wrong, it's usually like only a little bit wrong.
But so going to the Greek mythology, I think there's a lot of like the element is like hubris, which is a common story in a lot of Greek mythology.
Yeah, I would agree.
Because you've got the scientists who thought that who their whole thing was like, oh, we've made a new life form with the Vervoids. We've got to take them to Earth so we can make lots of money. Or one guy's like, oh, I'm going to take them and turn them into slaves.
They only run off of water and light.
Yeah. And then the head of security who takes over the ship because he's like, they're going to just shuffle me off. I want a much more comfortable retirement. So I'm here to make some money off of this.
Would have been a really solid story if it only took like,
if it didn't have to keep doing the pacing of a story arc four times.
Oh my God. Because they discovered the same things over and over and over again.
Yeah.
In each fucking story.
Yeah.
It was something like, to do with the Vervoids.
Yeah. Someone has a secret. Someone's doing this thing. And by the end of it, you're like, okay, I get what you're doing. There's a lot of secrets on this ship. So it could be a lot of people that are doing killings. There are multiple people who have motive and means to murder. But ultimately, it came down to one guy, which.
Because
I understand the premise there that you want it to be like a mystery, like who's really the murderer.
Well,
because
they also do pay homage, or they do have an allusion to Agatha Christie. Because
mm-hmm.
there's the one moment where the Karen, blonde Karen,
mm-hmm.
nasty lad.
Oh, Dr. Lasky.
Thank you.
Professor Lasky.
Professor Lasky. She's literally reading Murder on the Orient Express. And this they are on a ship flying through space. So I did appreciate the fact that not only are we getting this like Roman or like Greek mythos
mm-hmm.
tale with the addition of it being a murder mystery.
Mm-hmm.
Like there were a lot of elements where like that I was able to pick up on, which is a big deal for me.
Mm-hmm.
I used to be really good at that. And then I stopped when I graduated college and I didn't need to think anymore. But
didn't
now,
need to think at all about anything anymore.
No, no thoughts, square head. But whenever I do clock stuff like that, I get really proud of myself. And this did a very good job at saying, here's a couple little Easter eggs. We're pointing you in the right direction. Atta girl, Cassie, you got it. You know what's happening. It was the fact that the amount of time they had to kill in every episode made me at times go, I'm going to look away because I know when I look back, I'm going to know what's going to happen. Granted, I also wonder how much of that has to do with the fact that this was airing during 1986,
mm-hmm.
which I know that cable was and wasn't a thing. I don't remember when it was popular to have, like, not pay-per-view. What was that one box specifically that, like, you would get and it would allow you to record your TV?
Oh, a DVR?
Thank you, yes. Like, I don't...
I feel like DVR was the late 90s.
I feel like it was much later. Even still, so there is a part of me that recognizes, like, this is still in the days of TV where, yes, if you wanted to, you could easily take your VHS and record shit off the TV. I know that as a fact because we would do that in my house all the time,
mm-hmm.
well into the 2000s.
Mm-hmm.
But you're still having to cater to the people that don't have that tech or don't know how to do it, don't care enough to do it. Mm-hmm. And so having the story repeat is for a serialized program that you are not watching back to back in the same way that we are is helpful.
Mm-hmm.
But for us right now here in this world right now, having the story repeat was just not conducive to people with ADHD.
We're talking about it being in 1986. Let's talk about some of these 80s effects.
The sound. Meow.
The basically every sound effect was just one guy on a Casio keyboard.
Yes. I will say I do love the 60s did it, the 70s do it, and they still do it in the 80s, motherfucker. The one guy with the fiong.
with his
cha-cha. I love it.
I really liked the MIDI trumpet sounds. Those were getting me.
I know. They were making you laugh. The intro.
Yes, this
I have mixed feelings.
This season has a unique intro that had no other season of Doctor Who had this. Because not even the last season of Colin Baker. This was just for this season.
I know that you said like, oh, you had to think like now we have a whole orchestra that's doing it, and this was one guy. I'll remind you that Delia was doing this by herself in the radiophonic workshop.
Right, but
so she was also
let me rephrase that statement.
But it's ironic that the thing that she like absolutely would not like and did not like was Casio keyboards and mm-hmm. things that were more electronic and not manual. And the way that the theme song evolved from this very like crafted and specific sounds mm-hmm. that have been tweaked and warped to get these like beautiful sound effects to then just being on what I believe to be like maybe an Omnicord and a Casio keyboard.
Yeah, that's what I was laughing at. It wasn't like saying Delia wasn't doing a lot of work herself.
No, she worked so hard.
It's that she was using a lot of different tools to make one sound. Meanwhile, it's clearly just like a guy at a keyboard going down da down down da down down.
Delia's a hipster, man. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, that was what was making me laugh. That now we have the full BBC Symphonic Orchestra, and back then they just had a dude at a keyboard, and yeah, they needed.
They had a woman running the entire recording sound box with like three other dudes.
Yeah.
And now you have the one. And there were parts of it that I did like because it did scratch that part of my brain that has such a soft and squishy spot for Tomorrowland and Disney.
Mm-hmm.
Because it sounded.
A future that was too stupid to be.
Oh my God.
But then also not just the sound effects. There's also one of your favorite things in any of these shows. Big dumb suits.
Big dumb suits. Several big dumb suits.
Yeah.
Because we had our big dumb plant people. We had Daft Punk.
Mm-hmm. You had, I think you commented on the track suits they were wearing, which are not the same thing as the big dumb suits.
Yeah,
but I do Lasky's, think you like the track suits.
Track suits, which also like, does this take place in a far off distant future? Yes. Do I still think women will be coiffing their perfectly blonde hair and wearing matching tracksuits? Absolutely.
especially rich white women. Absolutely.
Oh my God.
You can pry matching colored tracksuits from rich white women's cold, dead hands.
Yep. fuck. And then the Vervoid.
Yeah.
The Vervoid's aesthetically very, very cool.
Yeah.
Almost what I imagine like. If somebody were to do like a very cool version of Little Shop of Horrors, mm-hmm. If they made Little Shop into a ballet and they needed Audrey 2 to dance, that's what she would look like.
Can I also say, I understand, and I say this partly because it makes me laugh, but also because I also say it seriously. I feel like the Vervoid should have been women.
Okay. Would you care to elaborate?
At first I had laughed at the...
Are
at
you
the,
saying that because today on the day of recording is International Women's Day?
Well, originally I had joked to myself because their heads look like vaginas.
Okay, very Georgia O'Keeffe of you. Go on.
But then the longer I thought about it, I was like, no, wait. Those are probably flowering plants. And they probably are... Like, those are probably, like, legitimately their... Like the female receptive organs of plants.
To be fair, some plants can be both male and female.
Yeah. Well, even then, all of them were men. Like that was fair. The other thing is they were all.
They all sounded well.
They were all coded male.
Mm,
because they were all.
I wrote down that they all sounded like Izzy Hands from Our Flag Means Death.
Because they were constantly whispering. They were all talking like this.
Which I suppose you could say that they were all men, but you and I could do this and sound the exact same.
I guess that's fair, but they were all like very clearly tall, broad-shouldered.
That's because they're plant aliens, dude.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like it would have been maybe even more.
What would a woman plant have looked like, huh?
It's shorter, narrow-shouldered, wider-hipped.
How dare you? On International Women's Day. Now, I do think to take back on my weird anti-feminist stance, I also do agree with you that those that the plants were all male because cum kills Daft Punk.
Yeah, there's a moment where the Mogarians are flying the ship. They've like it's part of the hijack. They're flying the ship, and then. I think they were supposed to be, it was supposed to be like liquid oxygen or something that like got sprayed
over
them.
They got cummed on and then they died.
Yeah, but it's so little liquid. That's exactly what it looks like. Like it was so silly. I had to bring your attention back to, it was like, I need you to see how little liquid they got shot with in the face.
Cause yeah, it was one of the moments.
It looked like someone just like slurped some milk up into a straw and then spit it out at them.
Oh, I guarantee you there was a PA just under camera going, Haktua on Daft Punk.
Doc Hua.
Stop it.
Do I get canceled over Doc Hua?
Yes. For me right now. I do like that the thing that ultimately killed the Vervoids.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that was like their life source,
mm-hmm.
and also their killer was light, which I did also laugh and I wrote it down because it made me giggle. In the beginning, you see the sign that says like high intensity or like high intensity light forbidden.
Mm-hmm.
I just saw light forbidden and went, oh, so it's like a little bit forbidden.
It's like a yield.
Like it's kind of, it's like not. It's not like, heavy forbidden, not medium, but just like light.
It's because that's the thing. If you're reading it that way, it's that high intensity is a little forbidden.
Yeah, that's what I thought it meant.
That's basically it's, they're just not allowing Colin Baker in there because he cannot monologue in that room with all of his intensity.
I understand what you mean now. Yeah, that's so funny. I was thinking about that for a good chunk.
Such an intrinsically stupid idea.
Yes, it is. But I do like that they go, ah, yes, let's just shine so much bright light at them using this viranium.
Mm-hmm.
Viranium. I spelled it V-I-R-A-N-I-S.
I think it was valerium.
Venerium.
Be careful, Cassie. Your tan's dangerously close to talking about the Vervoid heads.
I just said cum killed Daft Punk. I don't think it would be a bad idea if I said venereal. Whatever. The magnesium light that they were like, ah, yes. It'll be spring, summer, fall, and winter all in one.
Mm-hmm.
And they do kind of like a cool effect on the light. I don't know if it was in.
That was definitely a post-production thing. They definitely
did
something.
It was very cool. It was very Tron, but not.
Yeah, I liked it too. I thought that was very fun.
During that light, I think they only did it.
Vianesium is what it was called.
Vianesium. What the fuck were you spelling, Kat? Anyways. I really liked, I think they only did it on one suit, but one suit was all you needed to do on.
Mm-hmm.
They changed the colors of the leaves on them to go from green to brown.
Yeah.
So you saw one suit having it already happen, and then you saw another one going through the same process, and then all at once it's like decay.
Yeah, and they do it in a
and
clever
it's so cool.
They do it in a really clever way too, where the way they start doing it is just by blowing some dead leaves onto the Vervoids. So at first, first you're just getting like a layer of dirt under it. But then when they cut to another one, you see that the leaves are starting to darken.
They're turning orange. They go from this beautiful like emerald green to this like sickly sort of rusty burnt orange.
Yeah. And then one of the suits is like laying on the ground and it's been inflated somehow. And they just slowly let the air out of it. So it all like comes together.
It's
in a
so
pile.
Cool. Like,
and then they ruin it just a little bit by having the doctor pick up some of the leaves. And then instead of like them continuing,
we
to shrink,
don't need to talk about that
just,
part.
Just a crossfade to his hand with smaller chunks.
You know, if they had left that part out, that whole effect would have been just
Solid. Like even then, like that's just it's just a flavor of the time more than anything. Like it's not a problem. It's just a
no. It just looks stupid.
It's comparatively way less cool.
Whenever I see leaves like that, though, I'm reminded of that golden retriever that really likes to run out and jump into the pile of leaves. Hey, speaking about dogs. It's finally time for our favorite section.
Yeah, I realized we forgot to do this.
Who is my doctor? Woof, woof.
I realized we forgot to do this last section for the doctor.
It worked in my favor, though, because that did give me time to, like, think mm-hmm. and percolate on
I was so disappointed in us when I realized that though.
I'm also very disappointed
we
in
we
us.
Have so few recurring segments on this show.
Oh my god that's mine. I forgot. Have we done Matt Smith yet or no?
I believe we did. I know we talked about I thought we did it near the end of his first season.
I don't have anything written down, so
all right, well we can I'll go back and listen and we'll find out.
Okay. But yes, so do we want to start with Baker because we just watched him and that's who we're talking about, or do we want to go back and talk about Troughton?
Why don't we start with Troughton just because that was the one we watched last time and then we'll
so in here. I've been doing a lot of thinking.
Okay.
And I realized something that I really liked about Patrick Troughton is that he is simultaneously very young and very old looking mm-hmm. and for the most part very amicable, mm-hmm. very nice, like well-mannered, manicured, I would say. And because of these, I have decided that Patrick Troughton is a Scottish Terrier.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah, just because even if you see Scottish Terrier puppies, they look like they are already 500 years old.
To me, the second Doctor is, he's definitely a small dog. So I definitely think you're in the realm for Terrier for sure. There again, also something about very old and very young, but also there's just something about him that's very silly. And so there's a part of me that wants to call him like a little pit bull. Not a pit bull. What are the ones with like the really saggy faces?
Bulldog?
Yeah, bulldog.
Boston Terrier. Because bulldog, like, it depends on the kind of bulldog. Because English bulldogs are the ones that are like not bred for survival.
Yeah, I would say, I think a bulldog is what I'm thinking of. Is just
I'm just
silly to look at.
Are you fucking sure though, dude?
Well, we've talked a little bit about how we have that artist.
I'm not going to say that I completely disagree with you saying he's a bulldog, but are you serious? That's Patrick, dude.
Well, just to give you a little affirmation, the artist that we've brought up every time we do this.
That's the one. I feel like that's going to be our definitive, like, our answers are not right or wrong, but there is an artist who has drawn out these for us.
Yeah, T. Kyren over on DeviantArt. Their choice for Patrick Troughton is a Boston Terrier.
Okay.
Here's the art for it.
I don't disagree with that.
Yeah.
Because I'm definitely in the terrier world because terriers are very like happy-go-lucky. Like mm-hmm. they get along with most people. They're like very like okay with a lot of people, but they do have their specific ones that they're like very precious towards. Mm-hmm. I.e., my aunt's dog Lola. She's a terrier mix. She loves women. She is a feminist.
On International Women's Day.
She does not like some people. And we don't know why. Like, she absolutely adores, like, my cousin. That's her guy. Like, my cousin is her person.
The one boy she allows.
Through and through she loves. And my uncle and, like, you and Lola are kind of hot and cold.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she will allow you to be around, but she does not want you to pick her up and, like, squeeze on her like me and my sister do. And a lot of that also has to do with, like, she knows us. But Troughton reminds me very much in that same way of, like, I'll, like, get along with a lot of people. I love this one person, i.e. Jamie. Which I also do wonder if that decision is slightly jaded because of not Scottish Jamie.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there is a picture of two wearing a kilt.
And I do think that Boston Terrier is like a good midpoint between your Scottish Terrier and my bulldog.
I suppose. All right. And now Colin Baker. I knew Colin Baker right.
Oh, really? Okay.
Right. Like from the beginning.
Okay.
Because I wanted to pick something because here's my thought process. Here's what I did is I thought, what is a dog that looks very friendly and like on the surface is very like kind and genteel and gets a bad rap, mm-hmm. but also does have enough notoriety behind it to warrant its position on the aggressive dog list. And I thought about hair and overall presentation because Colin Baker clearly has a mop of very like wild blonde, like curly hair.
Mm-hmm.
And he's wearing what is effectively a clown suit. And a lot of times these dogs are used as circus performers.
Mm-hmm.
So I chose a Chow Chow.
Okay.
And they're friend shaped. And when I have met quite a few Chow Chows that are so very sweet, but when you, it's very similar with pit bulls where like they are nice dogs.
Mm-hmm.
They are some of the sweetest dogs. Very similar to Akitas as well.
Mm-hmm.
But if you anger them, if you push their buttons, if you're like really mistreating them just like any other dog,
mm-hmm.
but especially because it's a bigger breed, they will lash out and they do like they have a reputation for being aggressive.
Mm.
People like to associate like, oh, they're family friendly dogs with more popular dog breeds that have been popularized specifically by white people. But there are more reports of people getting their hands bit by untrained golden or like golden retrievers or Labrador retrievers than by pit bulls and German shepherds.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just me on my little dog pedestal.
If I was going to, I will admit I'm not great with dog breeds, so I'm sure there's a better one in my mind.
We're going off of, hi, I'm the animal autistic. Yeah. I am the cat, dog, bird, all animals I have some approximate knowledge on.
Mm-hmm.
You are not that.
No, I'm not that.
So we're going at this based off of my very like thought out answer and your vibe answer.
I feel
so
like,
what vibes are you getting?
I mean, if I was going to guess for him, I would say something like a sheepdog, like something that's very,
I did think a rough collie too.
Something very like something that could be both very silly, but very regal.
Yeah.
Like something that has
like an old English sheepdog or just like a generalized, cause there are quite a few sheepdog
again,
or like herding breed.
Again, I'm not great at dog breeds, so looking this up, I would probably say an old English sheepdog.
Okay.
There's something very both like silly and disarming, but also very like, oh, this dog has a job.
Yeah.
Like, oh,
see, so you went herding breed.
Yeah, that's sort of a herding breed for sure.
Okay.
T. Chiron has drawn them as a cocker spaniel.
Okay. Yeah.
I could also, especially like the old eye energy of a cocker spaniel.
The old eye.
You know what I mean? When you look at
I know. Cocker spaniels and pugs, and they all have the droopy eye syndrome where
they just have like an old soul behind them. I mean, I feel like I do like the cocker spaniel. I do think you might be a little more accurate with a chow chow.
If for no other reason.
I would never have guessed chow chow because I didn't know what they were until you pointed it out.
If for no other reason than also because you said that you and Colin Baker are made of circles, as are chow chows. Like even the healthiest chow chow is still like friend shaped.
Yeah. And then,
and like cocker spaniels as well. Like that is a very good pick. That was on my list,
mm-hmm.
but I liked specifically I think a lot about the like shape of people, which is also why I said for Troughton, Scottish Terrier,
mm-hmm.
because like, Troughton is also kind of triangle, like triangle, but still kind of round.
Yeah.
But Baker is like very round.
I enjoyed this little trip into the Sixth Doctor. I think that was a fun, like the story. Yeah. A little slow, but it's fun to see because
the story. Here's my thing. Whether or not the story is good does not replace how well an actor is playing a character.
Yes. Yes.
And for me, I think that I can really get behind and say that Six might be not my new favorite just because I really did latch on to Four,
mm-hmm.
which I also think is really funny that two of my favorite doctors are both Bakers. So when people ask and I say, oh, Baker is my favorite and they go, which one? I go, yes. Yes. So I think for that reason, I will say that they are both like equally favorites for me. If for no other reason, too, aesthetics. I really, really, really like this jacket.
Yeah, and we can also go back and watch some more of them at some point in the future and really get a vibe of if you prefer one over the other.
I would really like to see Tom Baker's Carmen Sandiego look in action.
Well, maybe we'll do that on the next episode of Who Is My Doctor?
Who is my doctor?
How is indeed. Okay, so here's the thing. I'm embarrassed to admit this, but this wasn't the Sixth Doctor story I meant to show Cassie. I meant to show her vengeance on Varos, but I had mixed up my V names and wrote down Vervoids. And by the time I'd realized my mistake, I'd already said what we'd be watching in the last episode. Be that as it may, it's still pretty impressive that she had such a high opinion of Colin Baker in what is arguably his worst story. Next week, we'll be sticking with the classic series one last time to watch the Seventh Doctor story, The Greatest Show in the Galaxy. So be sure you're subscribed to this podcast if you aren't already. Feel free to follow us over on Blue Sky at WIMDPOD. That's WIMDPOD. And if you'd like to support us more directly, you can find us over at Patreon at patreon.com/whoismydoctor, where you can join wonderful folks like our Big Daddy Dalek patrons, Andrew Blewett and David Gansel. We'll see you next Tuesday, because your Tuesdays are now Whose Days.